So speaking about the recent FDA approvals of T-DXd in a couple of different settings for HER2-positive breast cancer, starting off, what is the significance of the FDA approval of post-neoadjuvant T-DXd for HER2-positive disease?
The DB05 study, which was the post-neoadjuvant study that was, in a sense, modeled after Catherine, was, in a sense, the critical study of the two because it demonstrated statistically significant improvement in the long-term outcome of IDFS. And so it, in a sense, it was the study that was set up to be a definitive standalone trial to demonstrate effectiveness and safety of the drug in the population chosen. As I said, DB05 was a follow-up study to the Catherine trial. Catherine was the original study that looked to see if patients who still have residual invasive cancer after getting standard neoadjuvant HER2-targeted therapy with chemotherapy would benefit from receiving an antibody-drug conjugate relative to just continuing standard therapy. This drug, and that was T-DM1, and it was a very positive study. It really changed the way we treated HER2-positive breast cancer and shifted from, well, neoadjuvant therapy is an option, but you can also do surgery first and then do drug treatment afterwards. It really said you need to do neoadjuvant because you can find a patient population who, if you find them and you treat them with T-DM1, you will cut their risk of recurrence by a full 50%, a huge benefit. So it changed it. However, having said that, when you looked at the Catherine data, we could already see that there were some higher risk groups that were still, even though they had a 50% reduction in their risk of recurrence, they were at such high risk, it still left a substantial 20-25% chance that they would recur even after T-DM1. So unmet need. You know, we needed something better than T-DM1, which was a very good drug. 50% reduction is very exciting, but that was the problem. And as we were seeing that early data from Catherine, T-DXd was showing remarkable activity in patients with heavily pretreated HER2-positive breast cancer, and it was evident that this drug was going to be a major advance. And so it progressed through early lines of metastatic disease, but basically we felt like it was so promising we should go ahead and study it in these high-risk unmet need patients that we had identified in Catherine. So that's what DB05 did. It said, okay, T-DM1 is our new standard of care for patients without PCR. Let's compare it to T-DXd, but only in the patients who were really high risk, patients whose lymph nodes still contain cancer after the therapy, or who had come in with very advanced bulky disease and it didn't all go away. Those patients already at 3 years were recurring about 20% of the time. So that's who we targeted in this trial. It's interesting when you look at the Catherine trial data, long-term follow-up, all of the patients in that study wind up 7 to 8 years out with a high enough risk of recurrence, even with T-DM1, that you may want to consider T-DXd if it's substantially more better. So we have it's an interesting situation that the study only included high risk. And the reason we did that is we knew T-DXd carried a risk of bad lung toxicity, interstitial lung disease that can be fatal. And we were moving it into a curative population, so you have to be very careful there. So we just focused on the very high-risk patients where we knew early on there was an unmet need. The other thing that we were disappointed with Catherine was that T-DM1 didn't seem to prevent brain mets, which again, is an unmet need for patients with HER2-positive breast cancer, and T-DXd was showing evidence that it might be an ADC that worked in the brain. So that was the background to it. And basically, when we got to the point where we could do the first interim analysis on DB05, we saw again a 53% reduction in risk of recurrence relative to T-DM1. So another major reduction in risk. We also saw early evidence that we might be preventing some of the brain metastases. So it was, and the other important item was that with the careful monitoring with chest CT scans to look for lung disease, really paying attention, we were able to use it. There were still a few patients that died. Three patients died from ILD on the trial. There is a risk to it, but the benefit was huge. So we expected that the FDA would approve it, was likely to approve it based on the data, the strength of the data, because it was designed, if the study's positive and the drug is safe, we'll get approval, which they did. The real question was it going to just be in the highest risk patients, or would they broaden it to patients we didn't include, but who still had, who by 7-8 years had developed a 20% so chance, 15-20% chance of recurrence. And they basically did. The approval specifies patients with residual invasive cancer, which is identical to the original Catherine trial. So they really gave a broader approval than what we did in the trial, which I think as an oncologist is entirely appropriate, but that's not always what we see. DESTINY-Breast05 really, to me, represents sort of the culmination of, God goodness, 30 years of work, because when we first started doing neoadjuvant therapy, it was evident that, gee, the patients whose tumors disappear on the drug therapy have a much lower risk for recurrence than the women whose disease sees the therapy, but it still persists, non-path CR. So we've always had that recognition that, gee, maybe these non-PCR patients need better therapy, more therapy, but we really didn't have novel drugs with new mechanisms of actions until we had the antibody drug conjugates, and they made a huge difference. And we were able to stepwise, we took a big step with T-DM1, another big step then with T-DXd. So in a sense, now T-DXd has pretty much replaced T-DM1 in this setting. So it really, I think it was an important study, and certainly the indication. The FDA could have said, well, we're only approved in the patients you included. These patients you didn't include should still get T-DM1. But if they didn't, they left that to the discretion of physicians, basically with that approval functionally.
The FDA simultaneously approved neoadjuvant T-DXd followed by THP for patients with HER2-positive breast cancer. So can you speak a little bit to, you know, the significance of this approval here?
Yeah, the neoadjuvant approval was I a bit of a surprise, but the FDA in their announcement did provide their rationale for it. And some years ago, 2011, 2012, the FDA had decided that they would consider accelerated approval based on PCR if there was a meaningful improvement in PCR by adding your new drug. But that accelerated approval would only convert to a full approval if another study that looked at the long-term endpoints of invasive disease-free survival or overall survival confirmed that that improvement in PCR rates, which certainly suggests the drug's more active, actually resulted in a meaningful long-term endpoint. So they had established that some years ago, and the pertuzumab actually got approved on that basis because they had a Neosphere study that showed you added pertuzumab to trastuzumab, you increase the PCR rates. There was an adjuvant trial, the Affinity trial, that years later was positive for the addition of pertuzumab. So they gave a full approval to pertuzumab. So the FDA has used this pathway before. And what they did here was basically say, well, when we looked at the regimen that was used adding T-DXd, the PCR increased to a meaningful degree, and we know from DB05 there's long-term benefit. So we're going to go ahead and approve the neoadjuvant use of it as well, again, in a sense, to me, giving doctors options and tools to decide, you know, in individual patients, how best to use the drug. So I was a little surprised they did it, but they, with that rationale, I think it has some advantages. It is going to cause some confusion, though, as to what we do, because it's an interesting, last year was an interesting year, because when you started the year, we pretty much had a standard way of treating HER2-positive breast cancer. Most doctors in this country use the TCHP regimen. And then if you had a non-PCR, you got T-DM1. There were a few doctors that would still use a sequential THP anthracycline regimen, but not a lot here in the U.S. Then we headed into ASCO, and the theme of ASCO last year was de-escalation. We had a study, big study, from ECOG, the COMPASS HER2 study, where they just gave patients, they dropped the carbo, just gave them THP, and then operated, and showed that a substantial number of those patients, about a little over half, had a path complete response with that much simpler, less toxic regimen. And so we now have evidence that some patients can do just fine with just one chemo drug and the two antibodies. If you treat with more, you push the PCR rate up higher, but you're treating people that might not have needed it. But so there's been a lot of interest in that pathway. We also saw a study from colleagues in China where they directly looked at the TCHP regimen, dropping the carbo for 6 cycles, no difference at all. So that really said, wow, we should be de-escalating the chemo here, particularly since we've got these effective drugs behind T-DM1 and maybe T-DXd. Well, then we go to ESMO and we see DB05. Oh, great, okay. T-DXd is even better than T-DM1, but we also saw DB11. And basically what they did with DB11 was they had a 3-arm study where they said, well, we want to just see what T-DXd will do by itself for 8 cycles. We also, though, want to see if T-DXd, given with the THP regimen, will be better than giving the anthracycline with THP regimen. Other parts of the world, they still use the sequential anthracycline taxane sequence more than we do in the U.S. And so what they decided to do is make that the control arm. And basically the problem with the anthracyclines is they have cardiotoxicity. So that's why TCHP became more popular. It didn't risk cardiac damage, but it's got its own set of side effects. So the idea here was, okay, well, let's take a standard regimen of anthracycline cytoxan followed by THP and compare it to TDXD followed by THP followed by TDXD all the way through. And we'll just use the PCR as a primary endpoint. It'll be a smaller study. We're really not designed to get that long-term endpoint. We just want to see what the PCR rates are. And we had heard previously that 8-cycle TDXD for 8 cycles got closed early because the PCR rates weren't as high. But when you look at these two regimens, by giving the TDXD for 4 cycles instead of the anthracycline, you kick the PCR rates up substantially, about 10 or 15%. And like in DB05, in this study, because of the cardiac risk, they only picked patients who had larger tumors. Patients had to at least have, if their lymph nodes were negative, the primary tumor had to at least be 5 centimeters or greater, or they had to be node positive. So they were higher risk patients. And like in patients who were ER negative, HER2 positive, had PCR rate at 80%, very high in these high risk populations. So it clearly adds, but without the long-term endpoint, you wouldn't approve it. But they sort of said, well, taking the two together, we think both are fine. It basically says doctors be doctors. You know, you can choose what you want. The challenge of doing the TDXD initially before surgery is that if you don't have a pathologic complete response, what do I do now? Because previously we didn't use antibody drug conjugates neoadjuvantly. We brought them in when the standard treatments didn't make the cancer disappear. First with T-DM1, now with TDXD. Well, if you bring those in and you don't have residual disease, what do you do beyond that? That's actually going to be the biggest, you know, conundrum and thing. That's kind of the next question this will introduce. What do you do for those patients? If they had TDXD, do you use T-DM1? But we know TDXD is a much more active drug than T-DM1. We don't have a lot of information on how active T-DM1 is behind TDXD. Patients who had hormone receptor positive disease are going to get endocrine therapy. They could get neratinib. So there's particularly the ER negative patients, I think, will be a bit of a challenge as to knowing what to do. So there's that question. And again, if you do that, then you give everybody TDXD to push the PCR rate up higher. But you know, a lot of those patients could have PCR just with the THP. So this is the challenge when you're sitting down talking to a patient. Do we want to use this de-escalated, less intensive approach and see if the cancer will go away? And if it doesn't, then we can rescue you with these drugs on the back end, or do we want to just go for it all up front and push your PCR rates up higher? Because it's great to know, because if you have complete disappearance of your cancer, that's great news. You've got an excellent chance that this cancer is not going to recur. Now, we do know that with larger tumors, there's a little bit higher risk. So there's lots of nuance to all this, but I think it is a very important approval that is going to, I think, change the way we practice treating HER2 positive breast cancer here in the US, and then will be interesting to see globally. I think the adjuvant DB05 data will lead to global approval in that setting. How much gets approved in the neoadjuvant setting, I think, will probably vary by country to country. And then will they broaden it to these intermediate risk patients rather than just to include them rather than only limit it to the highest risk patients?
Is there anything else about either of these approvals or any of these trials that you would like to add before we close?
Yeah, I guess the only thing is just the reminder about the interstitial pneumonitis, because apparently I've not seen the approved label, but apparently the FDA did not specify monitoring the chest with CT scans that we did in the study that were part of it. So I think that is going to be another consideration that people have to think about, you know, because that interstitial lung disease, if it's recognized early and you stop the drug, generally is a very reversible process. But if it gets too far, patients die. So it's something that, you know, people will have to be aware of, where people are experienced from treating metastatic disease, but there you're kind of getting scans to monitor the response to therapy. It's this curative population, and what's the optimal way to screen for that interstitial lung disease is part of what I think we'll still have to work on to optimize that completely.